For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And it's like, I don't want to like, whoa, I'm not tinfoil hat. I'm not tinfoil hatting it over here or anything. Welcome back to Royals Weekly. I am your host, Marcus Mead, and joining me as always, the last person to let go of dabbing. In fact, he still does it. He loves it. My brother, Mike.
Now, I'm going to pretend to be confused about what that is, but then, bam, what's up? All right? I will dab on you when I get my victory dance going, all right?
He plans on being buried like this.
So, yes. I'm a middle school teacher, so there are still middle schoolers out there doing this, okay?
Get your guidance. How could
we
they
need
not?
To have an intervention is what we need to do because it's not good. I'm like, hey, buddy, never going to get a girlfriend. Never going to happen.
Anyway, but before we talk more about Mike traumatizing children, we first want to apologize if there are any technical difficulties. If you're hearing things funny, if Mike looks weirder than normal, we're having some technical issues with his garbage internet that he refuses to pay more for. And so we're having some issues there. Hopefully this all comes out very clear for you and sounds great as per usual. We've never had technical issues on this show before. So this is the first time territory. On this week's episode, we'll break down the opening series of the season, dive deep into what we're seeing from the team so far, and preview week two's games. But first, Royals Weekly is brought to you by All In Physical Therapy. For one-on-one personalized physical therapy, we choose All In Physical Therapy. Why? Because they took excellent care of our mother after her surgery. She went to All In Physical Therapy after surgery left her with pain and limited mobility in her arm. She was worried because she likes to work out and be active and all that sort of stuff. She's not flipping tractor tires. She's flipping small mid-sized SUVs. So that's kind of her thing.
Yeah. She came over the other day, actually. And yeah, she was throwing my kid so high in the air, I thought he was going to go through the roof.
She wanted to be able to do that stuff again. The excellent specialized care she got at All In Physical Therapy had her back to working out every morning in no time. If you're an athlete who's sustained a sports injury, the team at All In Physical Therapy will get you right. So give them a call and go see them. It's run by trained professionals and athletes who know how difficult the rehab process is. All In Physical Therapy is owned by and operated by Lee Summit's own Tommy Frevert, a former Arena League football player, Northwest Missouri State Bearcat, and as we know, a hell of a guy. They have offices in both Blue Springs and Lee Summit, but even if you're outside that area, it's worth it to make the trip into Lee Summit or Blue Springs just to get to work with Tommy. We trust the team at All In Physical Therapy, and so should you. Tell your doctor you want to do your physical therapy with the best of the best at All In Physical Therapy. To learn more, give them a call at 816-427-5300. That's 816-427-5300. Or visit their website at allin-pt.com. That's allin-pt.com. We'll start this week's review with roster news, as we typically do. Some interesting stuff went down on opening day right before the game ended up happening, and it caused a little bit of ire among some of the Royals diehards. The Royals traded beloved reliever Richard Lovelady, mostly a lot for name, but some for performance, to the Braves for cash considerations. Mike, what did you think of seeing Richard Lovelady traded to the Braves? First, he was optioned, then he was traded. What do you think? Good for the team, bad for the team? What are we thinking here?
First, no pitcher who has ever pitched as few of innings in Major League Baseball as Richard Lovelady has ever been described as beloved by a fan base. Okay. And that's maybe one of the reasons that we loved him was we all thought that he should have had a chance a long time ago. So I'm happy for him that he gets now maybe a chance to pitch in Major League Baseball, as it seemed like the Royals were never going to give that to him. Can't wait for him to be an all-star with the Braves or something like that, because that's, you know, what's going to happen now. I mean, obviously, especially with this new regime, in place, there had to have been something that they saw in the numbers or somewhere that said Richard Lovelady isn't going to be an effective major league reliever. I don't agree with that necessarily, because all I've seen from him has been success. But, you know, if they don't like it, get rid of the guy and we'll see. If he turns into a solid major league piece somewhere else, we know they made a mistake.
The only thing I put down in the rundown is, thanks, I hate it. I do not like the trade of Richard Lovelady, mostly because I think he can be an effective reliever. Now, I wonder if they're looking at his velocity and saying, wait, maybe he's not going to get all the way back from this injury that he's coming back from, because he's not throwing 93, 94, or even 95, which sometimes he touched when he was, you know, really at his highest peak velocity. He's not there. He's in the low 90s, sometimes even the high 80s a lot. And so, but that was really never his game. His game is deception lefty. His game is he's got a really good slider. His game is he can command a little bit. You know, he was really going to be an effective guy against lefties, I think. Obviously pitched very well in spring training, but we'll see. Like, I agree with you, Mike. I think that Braves will probably turn him into an excellent reliever from the left side, a guy that who can contribute for a long time if he can stay healthy. I will say it has been a common sort of thing that he gets hurt a little bit. And so if he stays healthy, though, I think the Braves are a good team to turn him into a successful major leaguer. The Royals also did a few other things. They traded Matt Beatty. He wasn't going to make the opening day roster, so they traded him to San Francisco again for cash considerations. They moved Drew Waters to the 10-day IL, which was a little bit interesting to me. I thought they might put him on the 60-day IL and then just plan on him coming back much later and then, make an open on the 40-man roster, but they decided not to do that. So they must be optimistic about his timetable coming back. They also moved Daniel Lynch to the 15-day IL. We kind of knew that was coming. He's going to be a while, probably a month into the season before he sees any major league time. On the field this week, the Royals went 0-3, right? They won 0 games and they lost 3 games. Everybody pretty much watches this opening series. It was dark. It was real reactionary on the timeline this week. You know, like obviously run prevention has been a little bit better than run production so far. The starting pitching has been promising at times. The rotation has given up just 5 earned runs in 15 and a third innings. The offense has been a roof, right? They were shut out in the first 2 games, so they did not score in the first 18 innings. Actually, more than that, because I don't know what inning they scored on in the game today, but it was a pretty long stretch. Okay. They had a pretty long stretch of scoreless innings to start the year here. But they did show a little spark and grab 4 runs in this third game. Problem is they gave up 7. Mike, what do you think of what you've seen so far from the Royals?
My hope here is that the bad results on offense don't cause a problem down the road. They don't discourage the players that are in there, because it seems like sometimes the process has been really good. They've been able to draw walks. They've been able to even hit the ball hard at times, just not get any results from it. So I hope it doesn't turn them into pressing, which maybe we saw some indications of today as Vinny Pasquantino laid down a bunt for a base hit at one point.
Well, he didn't actually get a base hit, to be clear. He tried to get a hit, tried to bunt for a hit.
No. Yeah, he tried to get a base hit, because if he bunts, he can't get a base hit.
He would have to place that possible thing like a Japanese 9 hitter. I mean, like, they're never, you know, just, no.
Yeah. So I don't know what the process was in his thinking or the team's thinking or whoever decided he was going to do that. But I hope it doesn't change what they're doing. It's 3 games. They weren't offensively productive for those 3 particularly, but they need to not stray the course yet. Okay, no big adjustments need to be made right now. Go out and try and hit this next series.
Yeah, they were something like 0-for-19 at one point with runners in scoring position. They were just terrible with runners in scoring position. They took a lot of walks in this opening series, which is encouraging. They got on base enough to win at least one of those 3 games, but just not good enough. Honestly, this is going to sound really bad because I know people are just angry. Like, there's a ton of anger out there about the Royals, which is a weird place to be in my mind so early in the season, especially with a new coach. Like, who are you angry at? Like, we have all new coaches.
No.
Yeah.
it's not a weird place to be.
It is.
The Royals have been out of contention in May so often.
Yeah, but
that I understand.
But I don't. Because what's your relationship with the team and the game if you're angry after three games? Like, three games. You're with a new coaching staff, a new GM, all new people in charge of this thing, and you're like angry after three games. Like, do you even understand baseball and how it works? Like, three games is not a sample size large enough to get angry about, in my mind. But I digress from that. Honestly, there are things I'm pointing to that have taken place that I'm encouraged by, because the starting rotation, the thing we worried about the most, has been somewhat solid, because the team they were facing, the Twins, looks really, really, really good, because the bullpen looked good for those first two games, at least. You know, there are some takeaways where you're like, actually, this team looks quite a bit different in the areas that we worried about the most. Do I think eventually the offense will come around? Yes, I do. I think they're pressing too much with guys on scoring position. And the thing that's holding them back, this batting average or this, you know, performance with runners in scoring position, we know that that's extremely variable, that goes up and down all the time, that sometimes you're going to have stretches of really bad plate appearances with runners in scoring position. I think it's an approach issue. I think they start pressing when they get guys on base, and I can document that with a lot of evidence, but I'm still encouraged by the fact that they're getting guys on base. I'm still encouraged by the fact that they're taking walks. I'm still encouraged by the fact that their starters haven't imploded, you know, in any of the first three games. That's encouraging to me. We'll see if it turns into wins and losses soon. We know they're going to have bad stretches at some point. What does it matter if it's at the beginning or in the middle? It's all sort of kind of the same in my mind.
I'll explain why. Because your fans are going to get frustrated. And that's what this is. Like, you call it anger, but no, what they are is they're frustrated when they expect. And here's the thing that kind of gets me with that. They are, I think a lot of people see them losing that, you know, getting swept in the opening series, and they say, oh, same old Royals they've been since 2015. You know, they're not going to compete. They're going to be out of it in May. Well, if you're actually watching the games closely, they're not the same team. You can see the differences that the new coaching staff has brought in. But when you've been, you know, when you've had your heart stomped on 40 times and your team's been so terrible, like, I get that. I understand the frustration. I am a man of the people, though, and you are like not.
Yeah, that's okay? True. I'm an elitist. You're a man of the people. That is the truth. That is the truth of it. I mean, because in my mind, I'm like, listen, if they had won the first three games, those exact same people would be like, yeah, they'll blow it in a week. You know, those people, you can't satisfy them. Like, you cannot satisfy that fan. There is no way. The cynical fan cannot be satisfied. And so, you know, I don't even think about them. I just, like, you know, it's three games, people. It is three games, right? Now, it being said, there is, you can't draw any big conclusions from the three games, but Mike, I want to be able to ask some questions about, so what questions do this opening series spark in you about the Royals?
The big one that kind of stuck out to me was, will they continue to draw walks at the rate that they have? They've drawn a lot of walks, especially for a Royals team, that brought back essentially the same personnel as they did last year. But they have taken a lot of walks, and I hope that continues, because like you said, we're getting people on base. Eventually, you know, we'll level out that batting average with guys on base, and we will start scoring runs from that.
Yeah, I think that's huge. I think we think about the guys going up and down the lineup right now. We're like, MJ Melendez has taken three walks. Bobby Wood Jr. has taken a couple of walks. Neither of those guys is actually hitting right now. They're all, I think Melendez is 0-9, which I'll talk about here in a second. I think Bobby Wood Jr. is 0-10, but they both have a few walks, so they're getting on base a little bit, you know. And then, you know, if they can take walks, if they can have that sort of approach up and down the lineup, it really does just give them opportunity to start hitting guys in whenever they finally get their, you know, runners in scoring position curse, you know, hexed away or whatever. You know, like, the thing that I'm taking away, the thing that I'm thinking about, or the question I'm asking from this opening series is, can this pitching last? And most importantly, can this starting pitching last? Because if it can, game changer for the Royals, right? If they can have some level of consistency in this starting rotation, that's game changer for the Royals. Because last year, we said it, it was the rotation and the bullpen to some degree, but really the rotation that killed them. They could not do anything to prevent runs from taking place. They got a solid start from Greinke. They got a solid start from Lyles, and they got a solid start from Keller. That's all we need. And a lot of it too is like, you know, they got pulled at the right time. They got some good defense. It was all sort of team wide run prevention. Kyle Isbell's playing like Ken Griffey Jr. reincarnated out in center field right now. And so, you know, there's that, but can this pitching last? If it can, to me, that's the story that we might have to sort of start thinking about as they move on into the rest of the season. There were some strong performers, despite the fact that the Royals went 0-3. Mike, tell us who got your strong performer of the week in a very truncated week.
Yes, I didn't even put down the numbers because it was so few at-bats and stuff. But Salvador Perez has been the only guy actually hitting consistently for them. So that's been good to see. He's caught all three games. He has a double. We haven't seen him put one out yet, but he had another hit in the game today. So Salvador Perez continues to be good. Now, he doesn't always start off real hot to a season either. So that was kind of a good thing to see. When nobody else is hitting, it's good to see Salvador Perez still picking it up at the age that he is currently at.
Young man out there. What is he, 32, 33? Young man.
I think he's 33.
Anyway, I'm putting the whole starting rotation up for strong performance because honestly, it has been. Three outings, three strong performances, and I'll take it all day, every day. We got Brady Singer tomorrow in Monday's game, and then Chris Bubich. There's a decent chance we get five decent outings in the first five games. And I say that and watch. They're going to go out and give out 12 runs each or something like that. But got to applaud them for that first series because they did very well in that opening series. Five earned runs and 15 and a third innings pitched. Quite a few strikeouts. The walks were too high, but mostly because Brad Keller walked the bases loaded today. Right at the end, he looked gassed and he just started walking guys. But we'll see if that holds, if they keep the strikeouts high and the walks low. Obviously, in a week where you get swept, you're going to have some bad performances. Mike, who was your weak performer of the week?
It was Hunter Dozier, man. Hunter Dozier just continues to not hit at all. He was 0-7 with two strikeouts and no walks. Everybody else was walking. Hunter Dozier couldn't get one. And so it's a little disheartening, but the one thing that happened today was Matt Duffy comes out and plays a solid third base today, and it's a home run today. And then somebody put out on Twitter that, like, over the last 2 or 3 years, Matt Duffy has a war of, like, 5 combined, and Hunter Dozier's is, like, -2.
I think Matt Duffy's war in their careers, his career war is something like 9.2, and Dozier's is like -2.5. And that was Christopher Tenpenny, I think, who put that out on Twitter today. I want to give him credit for that. Yeah. And so there was a lot of talk on Twitter today about, like, let's just not play Dozier anymore and play Duffy instead.
Just stick and, with Duffy.
You're not going to hear an argument from this corner right now. And so, yeah, bring on Duffy. He looked great. He really looked like a ball player today. He looked really great out there. My weak performer for the week is MJ Melendez. He went 0-9 with 3 walks. I could have chosen Bobby Witt Jr. He also has played poorly, mostly at the plate. Bobby Witt Jr. has done some decent things defensively, though he did make one big mental error defensively in the game on Saturday. But Melendez is also just kind of looking, they're both looking pretty lost. Their timing is not on right now. Melendez, I mean, we can start asking the questions like, did playing in the WBC hurt these guys? It seems pretty obvious with Bobby Witt Jr. He got virtually no playing time there. MJ Melendez just is looking like he's in a funk right now. Hopefully he can, and you know, the Royals have faced 3 really good pitchers. Maybe that's part of it, but they were 3 righties and Melendez still could not do a thing against them. And so hopefully he can find a way to turn it around. I'd like to say the plate appearances are really good. I don't know that they have been particularly good. The walks are good to see, but you know.
I watched one today where he actually got down 0-2. I think it might've been the very first at-bat of the game. I don't even remember how the at-bat ended, but I remember thinking, you know what? He's 0-2 on 2 pitches that he made the right decision on. You know, the first pitch of the game was a fastball right down the middle. He swings at it, fouls it back. The second one is a really good pitch in the low and away. It like tucked in the corner. He doesn't swing because there isn't anything he could do with it. And so now he's down 0-2. Not because of any bad approach or now he needs to do more damage on a fastball down the middle, but you know, I feel like that's more of where the problem is. It's not necessarily his approach right now. It's that when he's swinging at good pitches, he's not doing damage with them. That's a problem.
And that's been the problem for a few guys. That's been the problem for Bobby Witt Jr. too. I mean, his approach has been bad because he's just swinging too much, but he's also missed some balls right down the middle that he wanted to do damage on. Same with Melendez. Same with Vinny Pasquantino. He missed two fastballs right down Broadway to start an at bat the other day, and he swung at both of them. He just swung right through them. And what do those three guys have in common? They all played in the WBC. And it's like, I don't want to like, uh-oh, I'm not tinfoil hat. I'm not tinfoil hatting it over here or anything, you know, like, as you can see,
he's coming out against the WBC people.
I'm not coming out against it. I'm just saying, first off, at this point, it's clear Bobby Witt Jr. should not have played, right? Because he was never going to get any playing time and it hurt him. I think that much is obvious at this point. Same with Singer. I don't think he should have played either, but it is what it is at this point. But we do have to say, like, is it a coincidence that the guys who did that are all struggling offensively? All of them. Vinny was playing very subpar pitching against very subpar pitching in the WBC. Bobby Witt Jr. wasn't playing at all. MJ Melendez, you know, here. So who knows? I don't know. I'm just saying. Mike, what was your theme for this week? We got to move on to our spotlight segment.
All right. My theme was Bizarro World. Like in Seinfeld, where they talk about the Bizarro World. Because we thought the negative coming into this season would be the pitching staff and that our offense would be the stable part. And it was the exact opposite, like the Bizarro World. Okay. I'll be interested to see if carrying into next week, we still get Bizarro World Royals, or do we get the Royals that we thought we would see coming into the season?
Yeah, that's a good question. Offense has to turn around eventually. I think, you know, no team's going to score, you know, what's their average right now? Four runs over, like a run and a third a game or something like that. Like that's not going to happen. So eventually they'll get hot. The question is, how long will it take? You know, my theme is a very easy one. It's early. Calm down. It is early. Okay. Lots of baseball to play still. There was always going to be a stretch of the season where they lost at least three games in a row. So, you know, they're getting out of the way early, I guess. I want us to sort of be able to still enjoy the games we're watching. And that's hard to do if you just say, I saw someone say, I'm done, I'll come back in May. I'm like, all right, I guess. Like, I don't know.
They might be out of it in May by then.
You know, like, I know. By then, it might be even worse. Like, what are you talking about? Like, and so, yeah, we'll see. But it's still so, so early, everyone. We have baseball games that count to talk about, so we're going to talk about them. I know they were rough. The Royals went 0-3, but you know that makes that's making a lot of people toss their hands in resignation or exasperation. But if I may, let me just say, chill the F out, okay? It's three games. There's stuff to learn from these three games, but if you're really keen to throw in the towel after three games, maybe it's time to re-examine your relationship with this sport and this team. But we should take something away, I would say. Mike, let's try and be as objective as possible looking at this opening series. What's something that you were happy about in this opening series?
I kind of took two things because I'm selfish that way. I said the strikeout rate is up a little bit and the walk rate is down a little bit for our pitchers.
Oh, okay.
Our pitching staff, the strikeout rate is about one strikeout per nine higher than it was last year. And our walk rate isn't quite one walk below what it was last year per nine, but it's good. So that's kind of the happy thing I'm taking away. I hope I'm not stealing, you know, I'm not stealing your thing. Another happy thing I'll just throw in there because we mentioned it earlier and I forgot to say something was our hitters walk per nine rate right now, second in Major League Baseball. So we are walking at the second highest rate in Major League Baseball, at least going into today's game we were. And so that was good to see.
Yeah, I'm excited about a thing that is more managerial than anything, and that is pitcher usage. I think Matt Cotrero is showing that he is going to make the right moves when it comes to pitcher usage, that he's going to have a quick leash with a lot of their starters, that he's going to work matchups really well. What he's done in these first two games is forced the other team, the Twins in this case, to go to their bench to get rid of the bad matchup they had. So what he's done in two of these games at least, and maybe all three, he brings in someone like Amir Garrett, a lefty, to face some lefties of theirs. Well, it forces them to pinch hit with a righty off their bench. Well, you might say, oh, that creates a good matchup for them. Actually, no, it doesn't really, because a lot of times pinch hitters are more ineffective than regular hitters. They're just your worst hitters. Or, you know, they come off the bench cold or whatever. You know, like you want to face those pinch hitters, you know, even if because one, it means their lefties are now out of the lineup. Their starters are now out of the lineup. They're trusting pinch hitters. And, you know, it just, it's more effective than trying to just like, we have a guy for the sixth inning. We have a guy for the seventh inning. Don't do that. Play matchups. Amir Garrett is very good against lefties, but can also get righties out. And so, or at least that's their theory. He's pitched like garbage so far, but you know, he's not that bad. And so we'll see, but it's a good theory. It's a solid plan. And it looks like pitcher usage is going to be a lot more optimized than it has in the past. Now we talked about what makes us happy for that opening series. Mike, what concerns you about that opening series? We can't draw conclusions, but what's something that's concerning you after watching those first three games?
Not winning any games concerns me. Real simple. Like,
I thought you really well, you took the 2-foot putt there, huh?
I'm still traumatized as a Royals fan, right? The hardest thing about being a Royals fan is how consistently they are out of it in May. They don't like even drag you to a point where you're like, oh, it's July and we are still around 500. That never, it happens so rarely. In the seasons when they lose a lot, they do it early. And they do it often. And so I, as a fan, the thing that I own, the only thing I'm really hoping for is a longer stretch of baseball that matters. And, you know, too often they've been out of it in May. So the thing that concerns me most is going a series without winning at the very beginning of the season. Now, like you said, it's early. They were going to lose three games in a stretch anyway, but these games count just as much as the ones in August. And so, you know, it's just frustrating to me to do so well in spring training. And then you get up here and your offense is nowhere to be seen.
Yeah. I mean, that makes sense from a, I guess, how we're emotionally feeling about what's taking place. Kind of
exactly.
A thing.
Yes.
That makes sense. I mean, I get it. But you know, I'm still of the mind that's like three games is super early. They could win the next three. They're 500, you know, like, it's not, you know, it's not unprecedented. And so the thing that I sort of concerns me as I look really closely at these opening games is it's guys losing their approach with runners on base. So they're doing a decent job getting guys on base. And then you watch the at-bats that they take when the guys are on base, and they're just awful. They're terrible plate appearances. They're swinging at pitches early that are in the shadow or off the plate. They're just being way too aggressive with guys on base. And it's like, that's not how you do it. You need to have the same approach all the time. Here's your zone. Here's your swing zone. Okay. Until you get two strikes, you don't expand it. This is your swing zone. You know, it's not that difficult. And yet the over anxiousness, the eagerness to be the hero is just way too prevalent with a lot of them right now. And it's causing big, big problems. Now, I hope that doesn't carry over. I think it usually calms down as the season gets going and we're into the grind and everything. But boy, it's rough to watch right now.
Yeah. And like I stated earlier, my worry is that bad approach with guys on base when you're anxious and over aggressive will start to leak into other times because you're not seeing any results. You know, if you're not seeing results, that's when you start to press. That's when you start carrying a bad approach with you all the time. And I really don't want to see that, especially since a lot of these guys are younger. They haven't been, you know, for a lot of these guys, it's their very first opening day. Like, it's not, it may take a month before they start to calm down. And that sucks.
That's on the coach. Well, that's on the coaching staff, right? And so I'm a lot more confident in a Matt Cotrero-led locker room than I am in a Mike Matheny-led locker room. Yeah, one that can sort of say, hey, guys, you know, like, one, I'm going to give you a day off, or I'm going to sit you down and talk to you because you're just pressing like crazy. Like, relax out there. Like, just relax, you know? Like, and so, you know, we'll see. I'm more confident in it being resolved quickly under this regime than previous regime. So that's good. We do need to sort of think about what we're going to watch moving forward. I'm curious to know what you're going to look at now that you've seen three games. What are you paying close attention to? What are you looking at moving forward after this first three games?
Honestly, I'm looking at Bubich's start coming up in this next series. Really, the starting pitching staff overall. But I think with like Greinke and Lyles especially, you kind of know what you're going to get. With Singer, there's still some questions in my mind, especially since, you know, he had a great end of last season. And I think you can count on him, and I think he'd be great. But really, this Bubich start coming up is going to be, I think, huge. How is his demeanor out there? Does he seem calm? If he comes out in that first inning and he walks the first two hitters, and you're like, okay, this is, you know, that'll kind of increase the pressure and the tension. I'm hoping he comes. Really, that first inning for Bubic is going to be huge. And so I'm really curious to see that start from Bubic. And yeah, the rest of it, we'll continue to keep an eye on the starting pitching. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, I'm going to watch those plate appearances with guys on base, because I want to know, like, they're not going to come out and say that they did this, but I want to know what's being done in the clubhouse, in the locker room, and things like that to try to address it, to try and say, like, hey, we have a team-wide issue right now that our lineup is pretty universally pressing when guys get on base. And so, you know, what are we going to do about it as a coaching staff? What are we going to do about it as an entire team? What are we going to do to address this? Now, I think there is something mentally about just getting through the first series that kind of gives guys a reset and gets them to say, like, okay, now we're into the season. You know, like, Toronto's coming to town. They're going to face a couple pitchers who aren't world beaters. And so maybe that gives them some confidence. They did score 4 runs today. Maybe that sort of gives them some confidence. They can move into the, you know, flow of the season and start sort of turning some good at bats in when they have guys on base. Cause right now it's not looking great. I want to have one last question for our spotlight segment. And this is the one that I'm kind of most interested in. Mike, what is the big overreaction that you see taking place that you want to squash? That you want to say, like, stop doing that overreaction, please.
It's the one I said I understand and support. It's the, this is it's always the, what happens.
It's the one you're doing.
I do, man. I've been a Royals fan since, you know, gosh, who was the first player you remember watching as a kid? I'm talking like since Joe Randa, Carlos Fabelis, George Brett's last years, you know.
Mike Sweeney, that stuff.
Kevin Apier, those guys. And that was like when we were, what, 7, 8 years old. And so I understand. I remember those awful teams. I remember being out of it in May many, many, many times. But this is what always happens. But this is not the same team as those teams. They have an idea. This group, I believe in Matt Quatrero as understanding and having an idea of what to do. And there is talent on this team. And so, yeah, just this isn't, I know it feels like this is always what happens, but that ain't it. Okay.
I'm trying to stop people from overreacting about the offense, right? I get the concerns. They are not illegitimate. But what you need to understand about hitting with runners in scoring position is that it is variable. It fluctuates all the time. There is no, or at least there are a lot of people who will say there's no like clutch gene. There's no clutch ability or skill. It's just that, you know, sometimes the numbers look really bad hitting with runners in scoring position, and sometimes they get better, you know, and it just sort of fluctuates throughout the course of the season. It's one of those things that will come back, will regress to the mean. And so don't freak out. Don't worry. Don't, you know, this team will score plenty of runs, hopefully. I say all these things as if I have a crystal ball, but I don't. But, you know, it won't be this bad always. And so try not to overreact when it comes to things like hitting with runners in scoring position, because that often is pretty variable. We get a full slate of games this week. There will be a game every single day this week. How awesome is that? I'm very, very pumped to just watch baseball every single day this week. And so very excited about that. The minor leagues are also have also kicked off, and so AAA Omaha is already playing. And so if you're like, oh, I'm missing out on Royals today, if they have an off day, check and see if Omaha's playing. They're 3-0 to start the year, so, you know, might bring you more happiness. Who knows? But anyway, we get a full slate of games every day. Baseball. The Royals will start with a 4-game series at home. They'll stay at home against Toronto before hitting the left coast for a 3-game set against the Giants. Mike, tell us about the Fighting Whit Merrifields, also known as the Toronto Blue Jays.
They're 1-2 so far and already last in the AL East. Okay. Tough AL East, obviously. We will start off with Brady Singer against Jose Berrios. The 28-year-old right-handed pitcher that they got from Minnesota, if I'm not mistaken, who a lot of people thought was going to be like a superstar for a while, but had a real rough year last year, over 5 ERA. He still throws a fastball in the mid-90s, a slurve, a sinker, a changeup. He had some really good years with the Twins, and so now he's trying to bounce back from that. But he's kind of like a lot of Royals pitchers in that hitters love his fastball, and so he doesn't throw a very effective fastball anymore. After that is the game I'm really looking forward to, Chris Bubic against, oh, man, Yusei Kikuchi. Kikuchi. Is that right?
Yeah, that's close.
Yusei Kikuchi, a 31-year-old lefty, over 5 ERA last year, 1.5 whip last year. Those are both very bad numbers if you don't follow baseball statistics. So hopefully we can get in touch him up a little bit. Mid-90s fastball, slider, changeup, cutter. He throws his fastball a lot, but it gets hit pretty hard as well. So two guys that had not a lot of success last year. So we're hoping we can start off with some wins. The last one will be Zach Greinke versus Alex Manoah, a very good young pitcher, 25-year-old right-hander. 3.5 ERA last year, but he struggled in there for his first outing. So that's going to be a problem. Fastball, slider, changeup, but he's a good pitcher. And so that's going to be a challenging one. He's not overpowering with his stuff, but he's got really good command. Hitters were all over his slider apparently in his last outing, which is what you put in the notes right here. So thank you. And that is his best pitch typically. So, but Alex Manoah is supposed to be one of their best pitchers.
To be clear, he did not have a 3.0. I don't know what you said for his ERA last year. I didn't put his last year numbers on this because Manoah has already played or has already had a start this year and he got rocked in it. He did not pitch well. He has a 13.50 ERA right now and a 3.30 whip right now. But that's
my fault.
That's okay. Just in one start. And to be clear, his name is Alec Manoah, not Alex Manoah.
Give me a
Mike
break,
is
Gary.
Mike is just he's bringing a real mud pie to the episode today. face first into a pile of manure
why
for
would
you today.
Put his ERA when he's got one start?
Because he has stats to provide.
Last year stuff on there,
that
man.
Tells us how well he's doing this year. Really poorly, right? And so we'll take it. We'll take it.
He was an all-star last year, ladies and gentlemen.
But so far this year, he's Jackson Kowar. So,
who had a good outing today.
Don't be fooled by those numbers. I watched the game. It was not as good as the numbers looked. Anyway, after Toronto, they're flying out west just really once. Usually you see a West Coast trip where they have other guys, you know, but no, they're going to the San Francisco and then they're going to Arlington. And so it's not a real West Coast swing. They're just going out to play the Giants. The Giants are 1-2, which is last in the NL West. I wonder if their fans think the sky is falling, but we'll know. We'll see. We'll see. No, we don't have probables for every game. There's only probables out for the first game. We'll probably see Kevin Gausman in that first start, who is really, really good. The Giants really have a strong starting rotation. That's what's going to carry them this year. It's Gausman, it's Logan Webb, it's Alex Cobb, it's Ross Stripling, and it's Jake Junis, I think, is going to make some starts for them. We may get to see him in the series that we play against them. We'll see. I'm not real sure how it's going to work out, but that'd be cool because I like Jake Junis. Remember they turned him into a good starting pitcher after the Royals, just crapped the bed. The lineup, while the rotation's really good, the lineup is a mixture of kind of grizzled vets and young guys I've never heard of. So they're probably going to have some issues, scoring runs. They're a team that last year had some issues scoring runs. And so we'll see if their offense is clicking when we get there. Hopefully not. Maybe the Royals have a chance to get some wins this week facing two teams that are a combined 2-4. Is that right? 2-4? 2-4. Yeah. So we'll see. We'll end this week's episode like we end every episode with our Just About Outside segment, where we talk about something that's interesting to us outside the world of baseball. Mike, besides your garbage internet, what is interesting to you outside the world of baseball this week?
I'm getting warmed up for the 2023 NFL draft. You and I are people who have studied the draft in the past. And we used to hold draft parties at our house every year and really concerned with that sort of stuff. The Kansas City is hosting the draft this year for the first time since I can remember. Actually, that's going to be the first time ever because it used to just be in New York until they started moving it around. So, I'm excited for the draft. I've started looking into that sort of stuff, getting on the mock draft simulators kind of stuff. So I'm just pumped for the draft to see who the Chiefs can add. And then possibly get a championship ring for, you know, those guys, if you get drafted by the Chiefs, think about how likely it is you're going to get a ring. I mean, there's a chance, a good one. So I'm excited to see what happens April 27th. It's Thursday, April 27th, start of the NFL draft here in Kansas City, Mo.
Here's my thing. Love that the draft is happening here in Kansas City. Love that. Just because I like the city getting cool stuff. That's always awesome.
Yeah.
I am not a fan of the way the draft is covered now.
I hate it.
You and I became draft Knicks back when it was still like all done in one day or 2 days or something like that. And it was like, it was barely shown on TV. It was like ESPN 8, The Ocho or something. It was like, there was no big deal. It was like, there was no coverage, basically. No. It was just Mel Kiper and that was it, basically. And so I miss those days.
No, the great thing was day two. Day two, when like you had to go find it on ESPNU or whatever. And like they're flipping through picks like crazy. And you're like, I've never heard of this guy. Like that was the good days when it was like, hey, we got 12 hours to go because they get 10 minutes per pick in the seventh round. Like that was good stuff.
I liked it when it was an all day affair. Like not like a 2 hours in prime time. I liked it an all day affair on Saturday and Sunday. You could hang out and just watch the whole thing and just laze out and be a bum and look at these guys you've sort of been following for many, many months. That time of the NFL draft is my favorite. That's when I really fell in love with it. The way they cover it now with all the human interest stuff, I do not care. I don't care. And so it's rough. I don't even watch it anymore, really. I'll still read some stuff about it beforehand and everything, watch some highlight film, watch some film probably even on guys. And I'll definitely watch film on the guys that the Chiefs take, but I just can't get excited about the sort of ways in which they're playing to the, you know, the extremely casual NFL fan to get them to watch the draft. It bothers the shit out of me.
The thing that kills me is that I hate about the human interest stuff is they never do them in interesting or new ways.
No.
It's the same narrative every time. They just plug in a new player every year.
Oh, cancer kid stories?
Why are you doing this to them?
You mean a cancer kid story? They like, love a cancer kid story. That's their favorite thing to do. Cancer kid story. Okay. It just drives me nuts.
Like, just, you know, I understand. Yes. And the thing is, like, a lot of them have interesting stories. You can go out and tell their interesting story without telling it the exact same way you did for 20 guys, 20 previous years. Like, let's be smarter about it.
There's no levity to it. There's no nothing. It's like all pathos. It's like, hey, feel inspired by this guy and his journey. And it's like, can we get something that doesn't have such weirdly high stakes for a dude who's just made, you know, like tens of millions of dollars getting drafted? Like, what are we doing here? This is football we're talking about. Like, just, they don't all have to be wildly inspiring stories, you know, like everyone doesn't have to be the Blind Side or whatever, you know, like it drives me nuts. Anyway, you're getting me off on a rant here. I'm talking about Mythic Quest this week because my partner and I, what?
I think I've done this one before.
Oh, no, I went back and looked. It doesn't matter. Even if you have, I'm talking about Mythic Quest because my partner and I went back. A new season of Mythic Quest. If you don't know, Mythic Quest is a show on Apple TV Plus. And it was created by, what's his name? Rob McEnany or whatever. Yeah, whatever. He was one of the creators and one of the stars of Always Sunny in Philadelphia. He's a really just smart writer, basically. And this show is so well written. It is so good, both as a comedy and as like with enough, it's a dramedy, really, kind of. That's like 70% comedy, 30% drama, dealing with people's sort of inability sometimes to be socially, what's the word I'm looking for? Intelligent, socially, you know, aware and capable, dealing with a lot of different stuff. That's really interesting. And of course it's set in at a video game company where they run like one of these massive video games. It's a lot like basically World of Warcraft. And so just a really funny and also good show. If you ever get a chance, go see it. We just watched the most recent season and it is as well written as any season of television I can remember seeing. And so go ahead and give it a shot if you haven't. Ted Lasso is not the only good show on Apple TV Plus. Mythic Quest, I would argue, is just as good. And so please give it a shot. The actress who plays Poppy Lee, I love her. She is amazing in the show. And so, yeah, just give Mythic Quest a shot. It's really, really good, I promise. And give Royals Weekly a shot next week when we come back and talk about what is hopefully a 7-0 week for the Royals. Okay? So we'll be back to talk about the Royals, whether they go 7-0 or 0-7. We promise. Until then, be good to each other.
And go Royals!
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.